Judge, at this time, I should have mentioned this at the beginning, but just from a scheduling standpoint, there was some over-scheduling of this hearing with a meeting for OMS that I have to run at 1. Okay. So I'm hoping that we can take lunch from 1 to 2.
Lunch, okay.
Instead of, which makes us go a little longer, but.
Okay, that makes sense. That affects when we take breaks.
Yes, all right.
Well, if there are no further questions for this witness in open session here, then...
Judge, I do have a couple.
Oh, that's correct.
That's right. Mr. Krug, I guess just to give some simple questions, what happens if the commission denies this advance determination prudence? What do you envision would happen in that situation? How would these resources be treated?
Well, Hopefully, there seems to be general agreement, at least from you, by both us and your expert witness, that these resources lower costs. And so I think that would be unfortunate. But if you're asking me if the project will go forward, it will.
Right. I guess I'm not asking whether the project will go forward or even generally related costs, but I guess how would the company allocate the energy capacity and also costs between the Minnesota, South Dakota, or Minnesota, North Dakota on, the company?
Well, I think we'd need to work that through with in a separate proceeding.
Sure.
I'm aware that we've had discussions around those sort of issues in the past, and I assume we'd have to pick those discussions up again.
Right. Well, I guess when you're saying in a separate proceeding, you're saying a separate proceeding in front of Minnesota, or are you saying a separate proceeding in front of North Dakota?
In North Dakota.
Okay. I guess that would be under the assumption that this would be an advance determination of prudence is not granted. How about if no prudence is ever granted for this project? So I guess then in that case, there would be no future proceeding.
Well, we would have disallowed costs. That's true. But there certainly would be a concern that North Dakota customers would be receiving energy that they're not paying for, and we'd have to. I assume we would file some alternative proposal to get that right in some way.
Sure. Would one option be going back to Minnesota and I guess allocating it towards a different jurisdiction?
I think we certainly could make that request. Sure. We certainly could.
Okay. I have a couple questions regarding RECs, and it's just partially because I just don't understand them. Is there a standard for the renewable energy credits? When I'm saying that, does every jurisdiction in the United States view the renewable energy credits the same as opposed – considering, say, for example, we know wind in every jurisdiction probably is a renewable energy credit. Is biomass?
It's amazing all the disparate definitions there are with renewables. We have a system that we adhere to, the MRET system, which these will be registered with. But other parts of the country define renewables somewhat differently. Typically, wind and solar, almost everyone defines it. But there are unique circumstances around biomass, hydro, and other resources, yes.
Okay, so in different jurisdiction, what is a renewable energy credit in Minnesota may not be a renewable energy credit in hypothetically Missouri.
That's true, although, as I said, wind and solar are generally considered renewable everywhere.
Right. One thing I guess I wasn't sure about as well is you spoke about the expiration of the production tax credit. Do we know when that is set to expire?
I don't, actually.
Okay. Do we know any sort of sunset exists?
I'm not sure.
Okay. That's all the questions I have, Judge.
Okay. Any further questions? Commissioner Christman.
Is there anything really unique about NSP's system that you can explain to me that, you know, if everything else were equal, that this would seem more appealing to NSP as opposed to a different utility and to try and make that make more sense. If Google was looking at doing this in Fergus Falls or Wahpeton, do you think Otter Tail would reach the same conclusion about this wind farm being a low-cost source as you did, or if it were here in Bismarck, that MDU would reach the same conclusion?
I would hope they would. I don't know that there's anything that unique other than the land, which was available to serve them.
So that being said, since this is, and correct me if I'm misunderstanding this, this is just sort of a speculative thing. They've reached an agreement in case they decide to build there, right?
Well, in that sense, there is risk that they won't build there, yeah.
So if they have their ESGs and just go around to utilities all over the country and say, we might build a farm there if you do these changes, and everybody marches to the beat of that drummer and changes them just in case they might build there, are we not really turning over resource planning to Google by doing these things without any real commitment on their part to actually develop there?
Well, I would say they are unique, and they do have some market power, but in this particular case, we've been able to, well, as I said, the potential for 900 megawatts is very significant. But oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. I would just say that setting that aside, what we are obtaining to serve them will benefit all of our customers.
If they build?
No, even if they don't build, that energy that we are proposing to add will lower system costs for everyone, even if they don't appear.
No other questions. Thanks.
Any further questions? Seeing none, you may step down.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
I had some other redirect on a different topic.
On him?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Then there were further questions.
There were.
Okay. Continue.
Just real quick on Renewable Connect, since that's also been a topic today. I thought it's worth at least having a couple of discussions. One, just to clarify, it's a premium pricing product.
It is.
Thank you. And Mr. Armstrong talked to you about how did you determine what resources are used for Renewable Connect. Do you recall that question? And he asked if the North Dakota Commission had ever approved your use of those resources. Do you remember that too?
Right.
How do you determine that, and how do you ensure that that does not impact North Dakota customers for this very specific Minnesota program?
Well, it's a back office function. I mean, we're accounting for those for the energy produced by those resources and also the energy consumed by those particular customers and making sure that that's being paid for fully. So I think it's really a back office function that we're doing.
And that also includes the North Star Solar PPA that's part of Renewable Connect, correct? And that North Star Solar ADP was denied by this commission, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Nothing further.
Mr. Armstrong?
Nothing further.
Mr. Hsu?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Commissioners? You may step down.
Thank you.
Your next witness.
The company calls Ms. Faramandich.
Ms. Mandich, you were here for my previous admonitions as to perjury, so you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
Yes.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, Ms. Mandich. How are you? Are you the same Farah Mandich who submitted direct and rebuttal testimony in this case?
Yes.
Your testimony has been stipulated onto the record. And with that, the witness is available for cross.
Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you. Ms. Mandich, I will start with the question I asked Mr. Krug, and he referred to you. 1 second to find it.
Okay.
I had asked Mr. Krug about the estimated cost savings in the application of $97.4 million.
Yes.
And I just wanted to confirm that is for the entire 200 megawatts of this PPA. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And by removing the Renewable Connect, that would include, is that a, like, 25% of the cost savings would be gone?
We're proposing to allocate 25% of the project to Renewable Connect. However, I think we had a discussion around all resources that go on the system serve the system, and the cost allocation is separate from the modeling. So on a system basis, the benefit is $97 million.
You're going to have to help me understand that. So even though Renewable Connect will go into its own Minnesota system and be rate neutral, then the cost savings for North Dakota customers will still receive cost savings to the equivalent of 200 megawatts for this project?
So I can clarify what I meant. From a resource planning perspective, we analyze a resource on the basis of the whole system. I think from a cost allocation perspective, that would be different. So those costs would go specifically to participating customers in Minnesota, and then the remaining 150 megawatts of the project would be a system treated as a system resource for rate making purposes.
And with that, so the real cost savings we're talking about for this PPA, at least as proposed, is 25% or 75% of $97.4 million.
One could view it that way, yes.
In your testimony, you indicate the PPA provides savings primarily because the levelized cost of energy under it displaces higher cost generation in the near term, and in the long term is less than your modeled system average cost of fuel. Is that?
Yes, that's correct.
Is there a cost associated with the displacement of other generation?
I'm not sure I understand that question.
Well, by displacing other generation, that means that generation's energy is not being used. Is that what that means?
Yes.
And is there a cost associated with unused energy on the system?
Well, because energy is priced on a variable basis, I would say that there is fixed costs associated with those existing resources, but from a variable cost perspective, they would be priced at, you know, associated with when they're running.
So for the instance when the wind's blowing and the wind farms are producing, it displaces energy, say, from the Sherco coal plant?
Yes, that could happen, yes.
And the plant not operating, shutting down, not operating fully is less efficient, is that correct?
I would say from a fixed cost perspective, the costs are there. From a variable cost perspective, if it's not operating, it's also not expending fuel.
Are those costs incorporated in any way into the estimated cost savings?
Yes.
How?
The model essentially simulates how the system would dispatch over the course of a year, or in this case, the 25 years that we analyze. And so both the fixed and variable costs are considered in the course of the modeling.
How does the model pick which energy is being displaced, which generation?
It's essentially simulating how the resource stack would look in any given hour, and assessing whether or not it would be economic to produce from a certain resource versus another resource.
Do you have any way to tell us how much of the fixed costs from displacement of other energy are included in the model estimate?
All of the fixed costs of the existing plants are included in the modeling.
What's the number?
Oh, I don't have that offhand. I would have to find out.
What other generation will be displaced by this Heartland project?
I believe the model indicated that coal and gas would be partially displaced.
Is it, would it be NSP's coal and gas or any coal and gas?
It could be any coal and gas on the market. I mean, we model our system, so in our model, it's evaluating displacing coal and gas on our system. But in reality, you know, the energy will go into MISO, and so it could displace generation from other resources as well.
And it is fair to say that the company NSP is long on supply for the foreseeable future, is it not?
That's correct. We are long on capacity through approximately 25 or 26.
How long?
In excess of 1,000 accredited megawatts at this point.
When is the next time in the forecast that NSP needs needs to add generation on the system?
For system capacity needs, I believe it's 26.
And how about for energy?
I don't know that offhand. I think from an energy perspective, we can buy from the market as well. And so the model would make an economic decision if it's adding a resource for a capacity need or an energy need.
Is this specific project replacing anything on the NSP system?
I would say no. We're procuring it as an additional resource to meet a specific customer need.
And the argument for prudence is it will result in estimated cost savings over the long term.
That's correct.
And there's a dispute whether that's minimal cost savings or the company's estimate.
I think the record is not disputed as to whether the project will result in cost savings. I think both our modeling and the consultant's modeling show that.
Sure. Mr. Heidel said there were minimal cost savings. The company says, at least as I'm interpreting, 25% and $97.4 million.
Yes.
And that's all based on modeling.
Yes.
It's a projection.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
If the company's request is to this commission to approve this project because it's prudent because it results in cost savings, how do we reconcile that with taking 25% of it out for the Renewable Connect project?
Well, I would say according to our modeling, even if you take 25% of the savings out, the project still results in significant savings to customers.
No, I understand that. And that's the question is, if the driving factor for prudence is results in cost savings, shouldn't the system get all of the cost savings?
I think because, from my perspective, because we're procuring this for a specific customer need, we would allocate those costs according to what the specific ESA or Renewable Connect program would dictate.
So whatever, as Mr. Krug said, whatever decision is made in the back office, putting it in Renewable Connect, that's just fine. The savings can be divided how the company decides to do it.
From my perspective, yes. That if the project results in benefits to customers broadly on the system, that is what we are requesting, yes.
Could you tell us what the locational marginal price is?
Yes. I think what you're asking about is because the project is located in a different zone.
Yes.
The project is located in a different zone from the majority of our load. That said, we did evaluate the locational marginal prices both in the vicinity of the project as opposed to other projects that we have on the system, and there wasn't any significant difference between the LMP gap for those two analyses.
Was there a difference, though?
There is a difference, yes.
And do you agree that the LMP for Zone 1 is more than Zone 3?
I would say not systematically different. It really depends on the node. What we found was that the location of this project, the gap between the LMP at the project site and the load node was not systematically different from another resource we have in our system that would be located in Zone 1.
Regardless of the zone, would you agree with me that there were many times over the last year where the LMP in either Zone 1 or Zone 3 was less than the price of this PPA for a period of time?
I'm sure that's correct, yes.
Does the company need the energy or capacity from the Heartland Divide 2 project to serve customers in Zone 3?
Not specifically, no.
Does the company need the energy or capacity to serve from Heartland 2 to serve its entire customer demand?
No.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Mr. Hsu.
Your Honor, I don't have any questions right now. Thank you.
Commissioner Crosses.
All right, just a few questions. excuse me, just a few questions for you. And some I have already asked. Have you done the modeling on in terms of hitting a point of saturation on these PPAs that these companies continue to ask for? I mean, what's the ceiling right now for Xcel?
Well, I think we evaluate projects on a case-by-case basis. I would agree with what Mr. Krug said about transmission being a constraint at this point. It's very challenging to find new renewable resources that have transmission cost certainty, which is one of the reasons why we procured this specific resource, because it did have that cost certainty already.
Do you think the project will increase transmission costs over the course of time or contribute to increased transmission cost?
I think the incremental transmission cost that would be directly related to this project to make it a deliverable resource is baked into the PPA. Whether or not it incrementally contributes to transmission constraints more broadly in MISO, I think is a bit challenging to answer. It's not clear which is the marginal project that kind of pushes it over the edge to increase transmission costs.
But would it be fair to say that all contribute incrementally to moving in that direction, increasing transmission needs and also increasing cost at the same time?
Well, I would reiterate that specific to this project, a transmission investment that's needed to provide deliverability has been baked into the PPA. In general, any greenfield project, I think, could potentially contribute to increased transmission costs.
Okay. And then a couple of the questions are following Mr. Armstrong's counsel's questioning. And Sherco, and I think the point he was, well, I know the point he was making, if this, at Sherco 1 and 2, at times further decreases what is generated from those facilities. And you had talked about the fixed costs. You're spreading those out over fewer electrons, and then those electrons become more expensive, correct?
Well, the fixed costs of the project from a recovery perspective are spread over the load that we're serving. So if the load is increased essentially from the addition of this data center, those fixed costs would be spread over more kilowatt hours to customers.
You're talking for the Sherco units specifically?
Yeah. Well, for any unit on our system.
But I'm talking just the Sherco units. When you look and you say it costs $45 or $50, say $45 per megawatt hour to produce energy at the Sherco units. Part of that calculation are fixed costs, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
So if you have fewer electrons, that's going to move that number. That 45 is going to continue to go up if the plants are operating at a reduced capacity.
So I think the fixed cost would stay the same.
On a per electron basis.
yes. I might not be understanding the question.
Okay, I'm trying to think of how to frame it up. Let's just say it's you have $1,000 of fixed costs, and you're going to generate 100 100 kilowatts hours. Okay, so it's what, $10? So if you're only producing 50, doesn't that go to 20?
We would be selling fewer electrons from the plant, mm-hmm. yes.
And spreading the fixed costs over those fewer electrons, meaning it would make it more uneconomical to run that plant on paper, correct?
Yes. That may be true, yes.
And then that becomes another reason to, on the early retirements of Schirkel 1 and 2, it really becomes self-induced in that sense, doesn't it? When these types of unnecessary or unneeded, I should say, generating resource are added to the mix?
I would say on average, if we have lower cost energy available to serve our customers, then yes, a higher cost resource could be coal or any other resource would be less economic to operate. Yep.
Even if they cause those units, again, at a reduced capacity or reduced level of production to become less economical, they're actually hurting the economics of those existing facilities if they're displacing that generation, aren't they?
It could be, yes.
Okay. Then just one other curiosity question. The Google data center, and I may have been more appropriate to ask before, but I think it'd probably be generally known. I hear a British gentleman in the background. I'm not quite sure what to do with that. So they're listening in from afar. Do you know who owns the land that the Google data center will be placed on?
Xcel
owns the land, and it's adjacent to Schirkel 102. But okay, but the land is owned by Xcel. Okay, no other questions.
Commissioner Fedorcek.
Thank you, Farah. Appreciate your information so far. Kind of drill into the same thing again, I guess. So, as you're calculating the energy savings, which you guys calculate to be 97.4, and then I understand 97.4 million for North Dakota, correct? Or is that system-wide?
For the system as a whole.
And what's North Dakota? So North Dakota is 5% of that?
That's correct.
All right. Our advocate calculated it to be 40 million less, correct?
Yes.
What do you think of his calculation? I saw some of your explanation, and you thought he miscalculated the impact of being in the Zone 3.
Yeah, it appeared that he was primarily taking into account the benefits of selling excess energy into the market, which I think is definitely one benefit that our model accounts for, but not the only benefit. So from that perspective, I would say it's a partial. It captures part of the cost savings, but not all of it. I also would say that, to your question between Zone 1 and Zone 3, I think it's really a matter of what level you're analyzing the prices at. So in our resource planning modeling, because we model the whole system, we're using a Zone 1 price. For a specific project, you could also examine the specific node that project is being connected at relative to our load node. And so it's really more of a level of specificity question, I would say.
Well, since the overriding reason for this, the company suggesting we support this, is cost savings, we should be as granular as possible in trying to get the right number on what it really means, I think. So if your modeling, if I understood you correctly, is assuming that the energy is being sold in zone one, and it isn't, it's being sold in zone three, and if that's a lower price, then that affects the savings.
It would affect the savings. I would say, though, that on an LMP basis, our screening didn't identify significant differences between resources that are located in zone in the particular node that mm-hmm. project would be connected at versus other resources on our system. So that's kind of a secondary screening that we would conduct to make sure that our modeling is appropriate.
Okay. Then on the, you said his analysis of the $40 million less in savings compared to yours only calculates the benefit of selling the energy, excess energy into the system, and there's other benefits. What are those that he's missing, the other benefits?
In the sense that our modeling examines the project's impact on our full system, I think the displacement of lower cost of higher cost energy is the piece of that that was not evaluated.
Okay, can you just kind of run over how you guys model that, the displacement of the higher cost? I mean, it sounds so simple, but I'd like a little more information about what goes into that calculation.
Sure. So the company conducts resource planning using a model that simulates our system and its dispatch on an hourly basis. And so when we compare a base case of the resources that are currently on our system or would need to be added in the future to meet, you know, basic customer needs versus a change case of when a specific project is added, we look at the delta between those two cases to evaluate, you know, approximate what the effect of that particular project would look like.
And when you say it mimics your system on an hourly basis, is it seasonal? Is it just what kind of a snapshot in time do you use?
We model across currently from 2020 to 2045 is the cost modeling.
So it imitates your system for 25 years?
Yes.
On an hourly basis?
Yes.
Does it, what kind of assumptions does it make on run times and stuff? Like, you know, or transmission constraints and all those sorts of things. Like, how does it know how often, or how does it calculate how often this project in this zone with these transmission constraints is going to actually be running and inserting energy into the market?
I think the primary place where that would be accounted for is market price assumptions. So essentially the model has a choice between using our resources to meet a customer need in a particular hour or purchasing from the market subject to some transition constraint. And so it's sort of making that trade-off between whether it's beneficial to run our projects versus purchasing from the market.
Does it know if there's other projects in the area that might be lower cost that would run first?
We sort of proxy that through market pricing. We don't use a full MISO zonal model to analyze that.
Does it know transmission constraints?
We do put transmission constraints in a couple of different ways. So there's integration costs accounted for in the modeling, which partially addresses that. For new resources that would be...
Integration costs, just like the hooking up to the system? The connection, interconnection costs?
There are interconnection costs associated with new resources as well. Yeah. From an integration perspective, I think it is really evaluating more like I'm trying to figure out how to say this clearly. It's evaluating essentially if that plant, specific plant, would require some sort of backup to be integrated into the broader market. But for new resources, say if we had a capacity need in a specific year, our generic pricing assumptions for a new resource include transmission interconnection costs. So we are trying to capture that in the model.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't necessarily know whether there's room on the system, how much room on the system exists on an hourly basis in that area to actually sell this.
No, it doesn't get to that level of granularity.
Okay. It's based on price.
Yes.
Assuming, like, if it's the lowest price, it gets to run.
Yeah, there are some constraints in that sense. So we assume that there is a constraint for how much we can sell or buy from the market at any given time, subject, which simulates kind of the transmission system in that sense. But yeah, I would say it doesn't take into account all the specificity that you would need to essentially understand, for one specific project at one specific location, if there's an incremental congestion that's hard to account for.
So with this type of modeling, then, there's really, at no point would you ever reach kind of the saturation point that I think Commissioner Crosius was getting at earlier, where even if it is a lower price, it's not going to run because there's just too much low price energy on the market at that place at that time to do it. So you're building all these resources. They're sitting out there, not running. And you're justifying them because their price is lower than what the market price is. So, I mean, there's a disconnect in reality there, it feels to me, between what you're modeling and what is actually going to happen. And it's a big assumption then we're making on behalf of our customers that this is going to happen, and it may not.
I can understand that perspective. Mm-hmm. I think that's why we try to do the congestion, the LMP congestion screen, when we consider whether to add a specific project or not. In this case, it didn't show that there was significant congestion difference between this LMP versus our load node and any other resource we might have on the system. And so we felt like that was a prudent decision.
Mm. Okay. So, and then I just have one other chunk of questions, and it's about the fixed costs and how you model those in the savings calculation. It doesn't sound to me like you factor into the impact these resources, these new resources, energy-only resources, have on the run times of the capacity resources, and how then that increase, that fixed cost, is impacted. I know that the fixed cost is the fixed cost. I get that, but the units' economics are impacted by its runtime. And so there's all of that fixed cost that gets, like, doesn't find its way into the model. And then before long, we're retiring this one because we need a different one that's cheaper. And who modeled that and told us that when we counted these $87 million in savings?
So I think I could address that in a couple of different ways. So when we model the system, the savings is really evaluating the delta between the full system cost and the base case, and the full system cost and the change case where the project is added. And so from that perspective, both the fixed and variable costs of the existing capacity resources are accounted for. And really the gap is telling you whether or not this particular project is going to benefit customers. So in that sense, I think we're taking both into account, the fixed and the variable costs for a coal resource or an existing gas resource. The other thing I would say is that it's entirely possible and potentially likely that if we didn't procure this project for our customers, there could be another utility that would do that. And so whether or not we are signing the contract or not, the addition of this project is going to affect fixed resources that are more expensive on our system.
Sure. I get that. All right. Then my last question is, with your modeling, could you flood it with low cost resources and ever reach a point where it would say that that's not, that's too much, or there's the economics don't work, or, you know, how much could you continue to put in a low cost before something would trigger like you can't do this?
So I think the model evaluates that in the sense that we are needing to match customer demand and energy needs on an hourly basis. And so if we added a ton of resources that didn't have much capacity value associated with them or weren't running in the period of time when we would need them, the model would simulate additional costs essentially to procure either from the market or to build a new unit that was needed to meet that capacity need. And so I think the modeling process is robust enough to say if we were just going to go out and procure 15,000 megawatts of a resource that didn't have any capacity value associated with it, I think it would show that that would not be cost effective and we would not pursue that.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate your answers.
Commissioner Christman.
Did I understand you right earlier that you anticipate needing capacity before you'll need to add energy, and that the capacity needs you expect to be in about 2026?
Yes, our resource planning analysis indicates that we will likely have a capacity need in 26.
And is that based on some level of demand from Google on this project, or is that without this project?
Yes, the data center, a portion of the expected data center load is included in our baseline load forecast, so it is accounted for in the modeling.
And so when you accounted for that, how much, I mean, we've heard anywhere from up to 900 megawatts. I got to think a minute. Just forget that. Will capacity need to be added in 2026 or shortly thereafter, would you think, if the Google plant never materializes?
Yes.
Okay. And is the reason that you would have to add capacity before you'd have a need for more energy, really, because of the evolution in your energy generation from resources that have higher capacity factors to resources that have lower capacity factors?
So I think what generates the capacity need in our resource planning modeling is essentially that we don't rely on the market to provide our capacity needs. We do fixed resource adequacy planning, and so we would be planning to meet all of our customer needs plus the appropriate planning reserve margin through specific contracting or building new resources. So, but from an energy perspective, it's really more of an economic decision of like, we could get that energy from our, you know, from resources that we're specifically procuring, or we could buy it from the market if that's the need at the particular time. I'm not sure if that answered your question or not.
Well, so you would expect to add capacity by building additional resources?
Yes, either us building it or us contracting for it, yes.
Okay, and as you are imagining, it's only 5 years out, as you're imagining that for 2025, what are you imagining that to be?
So in our resource plan that we filed, in the supplement that we filed last year, in the North Dakota analysis that doesn't take into account carbon emissions, that need would be filled by a CT, essentially. In the Minnesota analysis that we did, it's filled by a solar resource.
So for the North Dakota model, you plan to gas, and for what was the part about solar? I missed that.
So our resource planning analysis optimizes essentially the lowest cost resource it can acquire for a particular need. In North Dakota, the planning standard doesn't take into account carbon. And so in that analysis, the resource that's selected to meet that capacity need is a CT.
Okay. And the cost of running those is important too. It's not just that you need to have a magical capacity factor, you are concerned about the cost of operating it, right?
Yes, the cost is taken into account in that decision.
And when you take that into account, is the ability to have gas contracts or gas storage calculated in to lessen the volatility of the gas market?
I know that we do pretty extensive gas planning at the company, so that's not my area of expertise, but there is planning that's associated with what we would need to ensure that there's fuel available.
So as a resource planner, does it seem, without it being your area of expertise specifically on the gas part, but as a resource planner, does it seem logical that adding gas storage would go along with adding gas capacity?
I think there are probably several ways you can work to ensure fuel security. Gas storage is one way. Having a resource be capable of operating on dual fuel in dual fuel configuration is another way. There are several options that would be available to us in that instance.
Would it surprise you if I said that we heard as recently as yesterday that there is no gas storage available in your area?
I'm not aware of that.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you.
Considering that our lunch is at 1 o'clock, this would be an optimum time for a break, unless your questioning is very brief.
I actually have no redirect, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
Ms. Mann, it's just a couple questions.
Proceed.
Does NSP sell all of its energy into the market as part of being a MISO participant?
Yes.
And does the revenue of the project get equal the MISO price times the total production then?
Yes, at the time of clearing, I believe it would.
Why doesn't valuing Heartland then involve calculating the revenue from selling into Zone 3 less the cost of the PPA?
Well, as I said, when we do system planning, we make a lot of simplifying assumptions. One of those simplifying assumptions is that we use Zone 1 for our pricing estimates. Having said that, our supplemental screening indicated that there wasn't a significant difference between the price at that node and the price that we would experience for other projects in Zone 1, and so we felt like it was appropriate to not take any additional factors into account there.
How much difference would there have to be for you to consider it a significant difference?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I could tell you a specific number for that.
Could you tell us what the difference was?
I believe there is. There is discovery. I don't know offhand,
is that,
but there is
in your
discovery.
Testimony?
Yeah.
Okay. We can look at your testimony.
page 7.
And as far as discussing a capacity need in 2026, how much capacity comes from the 200-megawatt Heartland Divide project?
I think at this point, based on the MISO guidelines, it would be somewhere around 34 megawatts.
And depending on the different types of projects, that one project might have a lot of energy to produce, but the capacity is much less. Is that correct?
Yeah, between different types of resources. Yes, that's correct.
And what types of resources, like if you have, say, 200 megawatts, like, so wind then it'd be like 200 megawatts under MISO would be a 34 megawatt capacity.
34 megawatts of accredited capacity, yeah. Yes.
Okay. And that's why the capacity demand is earlier because of than energy, because you can produce more energy than you have capacity for.
Yes, from some resources, that's correct, yep.
And different resources have accredited capacity that's closer to the energy produced as well, right?
Yes, different resources have accredited capacity that is capable of being as much as the energy produced.
Which resource has that?
Typically, thermal resources have higher accredited capacity.
Okay, that's all questions I have.
Mr. Hsu?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Commissioner Crushes.
Just a couple of more related to the land sale. Do you know if it was sold at market value?
That I do not know.
Okay, would the intent be to return the proceeds to ratepayers? And I realize it's not specific to the ADP.
We can certainly provide that in, as a late filed exhibit, Commissioner. There's lots of information. We can right. Walk you through the entire land sale, but ultimately, yes.
Okay, and then what happened? Do you know if the data center intends to place any solar on top of their facility?
I'm not aware of any plans.
If they were to cover the entire, because I don't know how many square feet it is, but I'm assuming it's substantial, the footprint. If they were to cover every square inch, would that change the modeling? Or how do you account for that in your resource planning, the future additions of rooftop solar, et cetera?
Yeah, in general, distributed solar at this point is accounted for as a reduction to our load.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you comfortable with how that's being modeled in terms of the impact that will have on?
Yeah, I would say that our forecasting can always be better. There's always room for improvement, but I would say that, yes, I think that's an appropriate way to account for it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchik.
No more questions.
Commissioner Christman.
When you put together your projections last fall, did you ever imagine $200 a decatherm gas in your modeling?
No, I would say that kind of volatility is not accounted for in the modeling.
Do you think after what we saw in February that it should be?
I would say as a matter of practice, we try to model prices and resources that reflect the market realities on average. That said, I do know that we evaluate extreme cases. We do sensitivity testing on a lot of different things, and so that is potentially one sensitivity we could test.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any further questions for this witness?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Seeing none, you may step down.
Thank you.
And we will take a 10-minute break. The time right now is 11:20, and so it'll be about 11:30. We'll come back. We're at recess. It's cold, yeah. We are back on the record, and it's a little past 11:30, And Mr. Simpson. Oh, I want to add that the cafeteria closes at 1 downstairs, so we're going to try to quit just a little bit before, maybe a quarter to or 10 to, so that if that is what people want to do for lunch, that they can do that. Mr. Simpson.
Gives us 80 minutes.
Do you have any further
witnesses? No, we rest our affirmative case and reserve the right to recall witnesses in rebuttal.
Mr. Armstrong.
Advocacy staff calls James Heidel.
Mr. Heidel, you were here for my previous admonitions as to perjury, so you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
Yes, I do.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
You may begin.
Mr. Heidel, are you the same James Heidel who prepared the pre-filed testimony we've entered as an exhibit today?
Yes.
And if I were to ask you those same questions today, would your answers be the same?
They would be the same, except I do want to note this is a little, sort of a change in one answer, and that is on page 29, the first answer, when I gave my understanding of how the company wanted to treat the 50 megawatts based upon the surrebuttal testimony and the data responses, I now understand that the company is proposing a different treatment. So my understanding has changed, and then... in the following question answer, that cost of $400,000 and, becomes on the order of $1 million.
Okay. And any other way that change affects your analysis at all?
No, it does not.
Okay. And have you listened to the testimony of NSP witnesses during the course of the hearing today?
Yes, I have.
Has any of that testimony changed your opinions in this case?
No, they haven't.
Okay. Mr. Heidel, from reading your testimony, obviously you didn't make an explicit recommendation of approval or rejection of this project. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Please explain.
I was, in reviewing it, I came up with the expectation, not the guarantee, that there be minimal savings for North Dakota customers. I understand that that's one of the criteria that this commission considers. But in the process of looking at this, I guess there's some issues that I thought should be brought to the attention to this commission, and they can decide. The first issue, which we've discussed a bit already this morning, was that the PPA is not needed for energy for the system. I characterize that as taking it's a long position. In other words, they have approximately, by their analysis, 25% more energy than they need. And I characterize that as betting on the market. And it's where that line is between, good resource planning and speculation is always a gray line. I think people, after the event, say they know it when they see it. But that's my first concern that I wanted to bring to the commission's attention. The second is, to me, it's not clear that this is the lowest cost resource. Now, when I say the lowest cost resource, it's not necessarily that at the time that the company decided that they needed to buy or needed to purchase this for the Honeycrisp contract, but in the context of the supplemental resource plan, which says we don't need a resource until the next decade for more than 10 years yet. And so it's not clear that this is necessarily a least cost resource in the long-term system planning perspective. The third issue is this MISO Zone 3 that I modeled it based upon the resource being in Zone 3, and I think that the company has far more, doesn't need the resources in Zone 3 to meet its energy or capacity obligations. And the fourth issue is this bifurcation of what's a low-cost resource. This morning, there was discussion about the Renewable Connect program. Three of the four programs mentioned in on the NSP website are all disputed resources and are treated one way in the fuel cost rider. But this is a low-cost resource, and they're proposing to treat it in a way that's that I thought should be brought to the attention of the commission.
If the commission approves the ADP, are you proposing any conditions?
Yes. One condition is that the that the ADP basically be held to these costs, and should the costs be higher, then that would the company would have to come back and defend those costs. I think that's this. Another one is this treatment of the renewable energy credits as a system resource. I think that if it's a system resource, then North Dakota should get its share of the cost of the system resource. And the third is this idea that if there are not enough cover RECs or enough RECs to deal with the obligations under the PPA with Honeycrisp, that the North Dakota customers be held harmless for that cost.
Did you have any additional recommendation with respect to the bifurcation of the project?
The fourth one is that given this these issues, that for 200, that this is a low-cost resource, that in my mind the whole resource should be treated as a system resource, because it should benefit all customers.
I tender Mr. Heidel for Cross.
Mr. Simser.
Thank you, Mr. Heidel. Good to see you again. Glad we can do this in person. You were also advocacy staff's witness for the Dakota Range 3 proceeding. Am I recalling that correctly?
That's correct.
And that was also another resource. That was the first 150 megawatts that the company selected to meet its obligations under the Honeycrisp Electric Service Agreement, correct? You remember
that?
Okay. And you didn't have any of the concerns about lowest costs or system energy. In fact, if I recall correctly, you recommended that ADP be approved because there were net cost savings for that resource.
Yes, and I think that the amount of the discovery was different in this case. I spent more time looking at the company's modeling and having a better understanding of what the company was doing. And that's where these concerns came up. And then, of course, there was no suggestion of bifurcating a resource between a system resource and to be used for another program.
So taking the bifurcation issue off the table, I mean, it's your view that if the company, let me rephrase that, if the 200 megawatt, if the company didn't ask to bifurcate the resource, you're saying that there's cost savings and it should be approved then, correct?
I still have I think given the additional analysis done for this ADP, I still have the same concern that, yes, the expectation is to lower cost, but we're still in a position where the company is long on energy and it's inconsistent with the supplemental integrated resource plan. Whether those are considerations, I leave that to the commission to decide whether those are important or not.
Okay, but fundamentally, your analysis indicates that there's a high likelihood of cost savings over the life of the PPA, correct?
That's a great question, because it always comes up when we do these forecasts of revenues, whether it's a high likelihood. And I think the best way to describe it is that it's an expected value.
There's expected value of this project to the system, correct?
That is correct.
And, in fact, that value is sufficient that you think that all 200 megawatts should be attributed to the system because of that value?
If a project has value, then I think the whole project should be included. In other words, what I'm trying to distinguish between is if the company came with only 100, if the wind farm was only 150 megawatts, then I wouldn't have come out and say, well, gee, you should go out and get another 50 megawatts. That's the distinction I'm trying to make.
Oh, okay. Well, that you actually asked my next question, which is, would your recommendation be different if the company presented 150 megawatt PPA and then purchased a separate tranche of 50 megawatts for the Renewable Connect program?
If the only issue that was in front of this commission was 150 megawatt PPA and Renewable Connect never came up, then I think I would have essentially had the same concerns about the long position, but I would not say you should buy more. The issue of Renewable Connect would never come up.
Okay. So if I'm reading your testimony correct, your point is that there's not a need for the project to, quote-unquote, serve retail load, correct?
Absent the requirements of the Honeycrisp ESA, yes.
So you do at least recognize that there is some driver of the company taking on this resource?
That's the complication of this project, yes.
What do you mean by complication?
In this ADP, it's not just we're bringing another 150 megawatt resource into the portfolio. I mean, the company's testimony brings up the Google Energy Services Agreement. That's the complication. I mean, that, you know, on one hand, the company says, well, this saves money, and even if we're long on power, it doesn't really matter because the contract with Honeycrisp requires us to get a new green resource. So that's what I'm saying. That's what complicates this. It's no longer black and white because we can't separate the two issues, evidently.
Would it be fair from your perspective to characterize the driver of this project as the Honeycrisp Electric Service Agreement?
I think that's a question better left for the company witness.
Is it your opinion that the company believes that the Honeycrisp ESA is a driver for this project?
Based on what I've read and what I've heard, I'm left with that impression. Whether that's what the company's opinion is or not, I don't want to speak to.
And your testimony here indicates functionally net savings, and we don't have to quibble if it's significant, small, or otherwise?
I think it's important for the commission in deciding what actions it takes to understand the level of savings. So I think the level of savings does matter.
I'm sure it does matter, but you testified and the company testified that there's some level of savings based on the model.
That's correct.
Okay. And in light of the some level of savings based on the modeling, if the Google load doesn't materialize, there's at least some cost benefits to the system.
There is some expected cost benefits. That's correct.
Okay. And if the Google load does materialize, those cost benefits, at least as appear to the at least as relate to the PPA, because it's a system resource, are still there.
In referring to the energy benefits would still be there.
Okay. Nothing further.
Mr. Hsu.
Mr. Heidel, just one question. Staff would like to hear your thoughts and opinions on the upfront banking of the RECs. What are your thoughts on that?
I understand the company's strategy. I think as a, you know, conceptually, it's a good strategy. Based upon, you know, numbers that we don't want to discuss in open session, I have some concerns about, you know, whether in fact this is the right strategy, the way to implement the goal that the company is trying to achieve.
Sure. Nothing else, Your Honor.
Commissioner Crosius.
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Thank you, Mr. Heidel. It seems that the one overriding factor for possibly the commission supporting this is the cost savings. How do we get a handle on what those, the best figure for that?
Well, I think Ms. Mandetch and I would agree that both of our forecasts are just that, and those exact numbers are unlikely to be right. If they were, we wouldn't be here. We'd be on a super yacht somewhere. So our ability to forecast the market is limited. I came up with a lower estimate. I have a slightly different different approach. I use a different approach to modeling the expected benefits are. I personally prefer, I understand NSP's approach. I prefer the approach that I used, where we modeled the whole MISO system, not in a sense modeling NSP as a closed system. So I, personally would put my bet on my numbers versus the company's numbers, but that's, I'm not saying I'm 100% right.
Could you turn on your microphone, please?
Sorry. I was coughing and turned it off. You heard her response to my question of your numbers, and she said she thought that you were just considering only the benefits of selling into the system and you weren't counting the displacement, the cost savings of displacement of higher cost energy. Is that true? Is that how your model works?
The way my modeling works is we take the load of the whole MISO system and constraints between MISO. We take all the generation and we dispatch, least cost generation to meet the load. So what my modeling does is say, given the MISO system, the revenues, as Ms. Mandetch indicated, the revenues that the project gets is the revenues from being dispatched by MISO. And so that's what I'm calculating. I think my numbers are correct. This is sort of gets a little arcane, but as she said, the company takes the zone one, their estimate of zone one MISO prices as an input to the model, and it's fixed. And what we're doing, or what I'm doing, is saying, given all the generation, what are the prices that come out of the model? And so, to me, it's not clear that if, just hypothetically, if we take Mankato and then we take MEC, why in the company's modeling their gas resources dispatch less when they add this wind project, and so they create a benefit. MISO, as you know, is a huge system. There's no, what is the assumption that Mankato would dispatch less? And that's what, so sure. So I think that the approach that we're taking, that I take, is what are the revenues based upon the MISO prices is a better indicator of what the project will get.
Sure.
In the savings.
In a sense, theirs is kind of in a vacuum, just modeling how their system would run, not taking into consideration
system. To NSP's defense, everyone makes simplifying assumptions, but those are assumptions I wouldn't make.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you got into this a little bit with Zev, but I want to follow up. Your points are that this is not a lowest cost resource, But then at the same time, you say that it's a low-cost resource and all the benefits should go to the customers. So it's a little confusing there that you're saying, I'm not sure this is the best resource, and I'm not, and you're betting on the market, and these may or may not be proved to be low-cost resources. But then at the same time, make sure that all of this goes to the customers. So can you sort of, like, rectify that for me?
I can try. part of the issue is that, you know, this resource, as I think as the company testified, is not only is going to be built and is going to be, and it's going to exist regardless of whether, what the commission decides. So this impact on the market, those prices are, those savings are there, those estimated savings are there. So my point is, if the estimated savings are there, you might as well, and you expect savings, you might as well take them all. But if you were starting from a blank slate, I guess the question is, why are you even buying a resource that you don't, that your own resource planning says you don't need till the next decade? Mm-hmm. So that's the duality that that I struggle with, and I understand it can sound a little convoluted.
Sure. Okay, and then are you in a sense just suggesting that we you didn't say this, but reading between the lines, are you suggesting that the best course of action is kind of a wait and see? Like, just don't give the ADP, don't deny it, just let the company go about its business and they can come back and when there's more certainty about how this plays out, we can see if it should be included in rates or not.
So just to preface this, I'm not sure how my client feels about this, but I certainly think that's a pretty reasonable, the no action and wait and see is since they're not unequivocally, large benefits, because again, if my number is, roughly $40 million, for the whole project, and you take 75% of that, and then you take 5% of that for North Dakota, my testimony knows it's 0.0001 cents per kilowatt hour savings. I mean, it doesn't move rates for, for the North Dakota customers much one way or the other.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman.
If this ADP were to be approved, I got a little confused on your testimony. Based on, you had said at the beginning that there was one piece of the puzzle that you had kind of interpreted differently before the rebuttal testimony came out. So if it were approved, is your recommendation at this point to do the first three of those four qualifications, or to do all four of them?
If it were approved, my recommendation is to approve 200 megawatts. If only 100, if 75% or 150 megawatts is approved, I think that this proceeding has identified, a potential issue that needs to be looked at in the fuel cost rider as to how a low-cost resource is treated in terms of coming up with the fuel cost rider. I'm sorry if that's a little confusing, but from my experience in working, on ADPs and working on other matters in front of this commission, we've had a lot of discussion about how to treat disputed resources. This is the first time that that I'm aware of that we've had a discussion about how to treat a
a low-cost resource that's not included in the company's fuel cost rider. So that's the open issue to me.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you.
Mr. Armstrong.
No further questions.
Any further questions, Mr. Simster?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Any further questions, Jack?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Commissioners? I'm seeing nothing. So that means you may step down.
I got off easy.
Do you have any further witnesses?
No, advocacy staff rests.
Okay. Are there any further witnesses that or anything else that needs to be brought before the commission?
No, Your Honor.
Well, then at this time, I think that we would have public comment if there is any, but I don't see anybody over there that wants to speak. So we can close it up with closing remarks by the commissioners. Commissioner Crotchis.
Well, thank you. Excuse me, and I apologize. I've been battling this. A little bit of a cough. Must be allergies that time of the year. But thank you, everyone, for taking the time to be here. I know a lot of work goes into this from all parties, and it's greatly appreciated to have the type of information in front of us to be able to make a decision from. So I thought it was complete, and still some more work to do on my end based on some of the answers and the questioning today to review the case. But thank you so much for being here, and safe travels back to wherever you do call home.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
It's great having everybody in the room. Thank you for making the effort to be here and go through everything. I think it's an interesting case and a lot to consider and some important precedent moving forward, I think. So look forward to continuing to work through it and come to a decision. Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman.
You know, nothing specific on the issues at hand, but I just will say this. Sometimes these cases, I get frustrated when we get a big bunch of information and you comb through it, and then you get sent all the same stuff again, but with a few changes, and you kind of feel like you need to hunt through every word of it to find just exactly what the changes might have been. And I appreciate that in this case we got our information, we got the advocacy response, we got rebuttal, but it wasn't always new batches of mostly the same information because it wasn't done right the first time. And so thank you for that. It made preparing for the case much better than what happens in some cases. Thank you, everybody.
Closing matters. Mr. Simster, Mr. Armstrong.
I mean, I think just briefly, you know, we look forward to watching the commission's work session on this item. This is an important case from our perspective. We think that these kinds of economic development opportunities generally generate material benefits for all customers throughout the system. That growing load is a useful outcome. We're seeking to make this a system resource because it generally provides, if not material benefits, certainly no net harm, and certainly some cost savings. So regardless of if this project shows up or if it doesn't, customers are at least no worse off and likely in a better position than if this project wasn't on the system. And it's important to note that we've had, you know, this is the second tranche of generation that we're bringing in just for this project. The first tranche was approved by the commission. Mr. Heidel actually recommended that one. And so we seem to have a little bit of a different fact pattern with this case that just want to remind the commission to take into consideration. And the last piece, frankly, is we look forward to providing any additional information the commission might need to help reach an outcome here.
Everybody's looking at me. I guess it's my turn. Advocacy staff, as you heard, you know, there was a previous order for the Dakota Range 3, which adopted conditions recommended by Mr. Heidel in this case. This case is a little different than Dakota Range 3, and it brought up more issues that made for other discussions. And frankly, the weight to be put on those and how they affect prudence really comes down to the weight that this commission puts on those, and if it means that this project is prudent or not. I think there are legitimate concerns raised by Mr. Heidel and raised throughout the testimony, and that makes for a hard decision. But how do we handle these things when we're adding so much energy and generation that's not needed when you evaluate it on a system resource and which is displacing other generation and which is in a different zone and which is trying to be bifurcated between a Minnesota project and then this Google retail sales agreement? Those are not easy answers. If the commission does determine that this is prudent solely based on the cost savings going forward, we think those cost savings should be shared system-wide. I'm not sure just having some minimal cost savings equals prudence, but of course that'll be a discussion for the commission to have. So if the commission approves this, we ask that Mr. Heidel's recommendations be implemented, and we thank you for your time today.
So post-hearing here, we have one late-filed exhibit that I heard brought up about the land sale. Is that still going to be a late-filed exhibit?
Yeah, we can provide that. 14 days, sound good?
Okay. Are there any other items that need to be provided?
Nothing from advocacy staff. Not that I'm aware of.
In this case, no briefs or findings or anything like that, Mr. Hsu?
I think we'd prefer to have proposed findings, Your Honor.
Findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order?
We're happy to provide proposed findings. Would advisory staff or the commissioners find it helpful for briefing? I certainly don't want to create more work or more delay, but...
Sure.
I think the... Oh.
Well, I was going to say I would leave that up to the commissioners if they feel like some briefing on the issue would be helpful as well.
I don't...
Would you like it, Commissioner? Okay. I'm hearing some support for it. Okay. So I guess, Your Honor.
So what kind of timeline are we looking at there?
Give me 30 days subject to check.
Okay. 30 days for the findings of fact and a brief. Is there anything else?
Are you thinking those simultaneous or...
I don't think we need reply.
Unless you have something to say about that, but simultaneous is usually an expeditious way to do it.
I know, it usually goes faster, but it doesn't give us an up. We'll make it work. I'd rather see theirs and then give our response. I think it clarifies the issue, but if the commission would like them sooner, then...
Is there a preference by the commission on time on this to move quickly, or is...
what Mitch is outlining makes sense.
Okay.
I think the best information.
Yep. Okay.
I think the best information is more important than the timing. Yep.
Then we won't do simultaneous. We'll do it in the normal way.
We can get ours filed. Give us 21 days after NSPs should be sufficient.
And you another what?
I if we feel we need to reply, we'll reply in all due haste.
Okay.
Yeah, well, whatever, yeah, I think so. I don't know. I know. I'm just trying to get it squared away. We want to make sure the commission has the right information. We don't actually normally brief these.
Correct.
Correct,
and that's why I was asking this might benefit from it. So that's why I was trying to get an answer from the mayor. Is there anything else that needs to be brought before the commission at this time? If not, the time is about 12:06 p.m. on June 10th, 2021, and the hearing for the advanced determination of prudence in PSC case number PU-20-433 is closed, but we'll keep the record open for late filed exhibits and for the briefs and whatnot. So with that, the hearing is closed.
So one post-closing.